This is episode 2 of the Sales Change Podcast. We're talking to Sean Burgess of Sean Burgess Fitness, located in Broadstone in Dorset in the south of England. We'll be talking to Sean about how he moved from a rented space in a gym franchise to starting his own limited company, how he became the busiest trainer in the Southwest, which led him to a successful fitness business, what model he uses to recruit new personal trainers to his business, and the mistakes he's made in the past. You might not believe this, but Sean's huge on social media, but it's not his biggest tool. It's not what he enjoys. And we also ask him the Sales Change 5 questions, which we ask on every single podcast. If you do like the podcast, go on Apple Podcasts, rate us 5 stars, leave me a comment, and I'll see if I can reply to them. That would be nice. Hi, Sean. Welcome to the Sales Change Podcast. I know you. I go to your gym. So tell me about you. Tell me about how you started Sean Burgess Fitness and what it's all about.
Okay. So I could answer this question and probably spend about an hour, or I could try and sum it up in 2 or 3 minutes. Long story short, I moved to Bournemouth originally in 2008 and went to Bournemouth University. Whilst I was there, I completed a few more of my sort of fitness qualifications and then decided to basically launch my own sort of little self-titled fitness training business. So originally just training like students and just friends and like, you know, kind of doing sort of odd sessions here and there, people's houses, going to the gym, sneaking people in. Don't tell anyone that. and just kind of doing just odds and sods. And then when I was back home, so I'm from London originally, so when I was back home, I was working in the gym. I was doing that before I came to uni. I was just doing fitness instructing and just classes and things like that. And then obviously carried that on. And then fast forward, so it'd be about a year and a half. So I got to the point where I was looking to start a placement, or find a placement, I should say.
And straight out of uni?
So this is like my third year at uni. So I did a BSc, so I did a 4-year degree. Third year, you have to do a year in industry and, you know, obviously go out and work, get some like real life experience, etc. So being like pretty much the only guy on my course, which was like sort of fitness industry qualified, I got quite a few offers from different companies to work for them, do various things. And the one that kind of appealed to me the most was like a personal training sort of company, which placed PTs in gyms, but you kind of work for yourself, but at the same time, you kind of wear their sort of branding and do all that sort of stuff. So I thought, well, you know, it sounds interesting. You know, I've got a bit of experience from doing that, being in the gym back home, chatting to people, doing all that sort of stuff. You know, let's give it a go. It could be fun. So I did. And that was originally a gym called LA Fitness in Tower Park, which is like near Poole, if you don't know.
Huge franchise.
Yeah. So now it's Pure Gym. So it's been shut down for a few years. But anyway, long story short, that went very well. Very, very well. So I was like the busiest trainer in the Southwest. I broke loads of the club records. I was very, very busy, like pretty much fully booked.
How did you do that? How did you get more clients than anybody else?
I think I worked harder. I think that was one thing. You know, like, a lot of trainers kind of limit themselves to sort of set hours and patterns. So, you know, they're only sort of a morning trainer, crack of dawn, finish at lunchtime, go home, blah, blah, blah. Some trainers are, you know, just coming for the evenings, afternoons. Whereas I was of the attitude, well, if this doesn't go well, I'm in a whole heap of trouble because, you know, I've got like a £500 month rent to pay per month. I've got my house bills. I've got like pride on the line because my old man and people back home were like, you're crazy. Why are you going to take this on? You could work at the gym, which is a 2-minute walk from your dad's house. And like, you've got no rent to pay and you've got people there, you know, and could train already. And I was like, yeah, but it's no challenge. So I decided to basically do that. I thought, you know, I like this idea of the challenge. Got a little flat rental in Charminster with some Korean students. lived there for a year, and it went really well. Like I said, you know, I got really busy. It just grew and grew. I carried it on in my final year of uni, but I sort of cut my hours down, so I was just basically just doing evenings really. So I used to go in at sort of like 4 or 5 o'clock and just work through the night, and then during the day I'll be at uni and studying and doing whatever.
So it's full on.
Yeah, it's pretty full on. And actually, I've left out as well. I used to play semi-pro football as well, so I was doing that as well. So I was pretty busy. So I was doing that as well. And then, long story short, I got to the point where I graduated from Bournemouth. I wanted to do a master's. I spoke to LA about sort of like maybe reducing my rent because I was only going to be around like one day a week because I was going
to
be in London.
So you had to pay rent in the gym?
Yeah.
Blimey.
Yeah. So I paid rent in the gym. And then I was moving to London because I went to Middlesex Uni, had lots of opportunities there, like with professional sports clubs to work for them as well. So I wanted to take those up. And then I said to him, look, you know, I've got a great client base. I don't want to give it all up because, you know, obviously it's a easy sort of one.
You've worked hard for it.
Yeah, I've worked hard for it. I don't want to give it up. And obviously, you know, I don't want to have to sort of start again if I do move back down here and stuff like that. But they wouldn't budge on the rent. So I was a bit rocking a hard place and then went for dinner at my missus's house and her father-in-law at the time sort of said, you know, there's a gym in Broadstone, like just down the road. It's quite a small one, blah, blah, blah. You know, you might want to pop in, see if they'll let you sort of move a few people over. So I was like, oh, okay. Never even heard of it, didn't even know where Broadstone was, anything like that. So I popped in, put the idea forward to the management. They had no trainers like who were doing that. Like
no resident.
No resident trainers who were paying like a rent. They just had people like sort of worked in-house, but only literally like one or two of them. So it all had to go through like the YMCA directors and people.
Yeah, yeah, because you work in a YMCA franchise sort of gym.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, so it did that. And then it took a few months, took a few meetings, but we got there eventually and they sort of negotiated a deal where I could sort of work one day a week. And then I built up obviously a few clients there as well. So then that came 2 days a week. And then I got to the point of graduating from my master's. And then I was kind of in this position where I was at a crossroads because I'd been working in strength conditioning and I worked for like quite a few professional rugby clubs, athletics clubs, things like that. And there was offers on the table to potentially do that, or I could be like one of the other students who were just applying for things left, right and centre and hoping to get something and do that full time. Or I had this kind of business which had sort of been fairly self-sustainable for sort of 2+ years, maybe longer. And, you know, there was opportunities down in Dorset to like kind of grow outside of the business as well. So.
Was it more money to go for the like the pro clubs and stuff, or was it not
No. So as a strength conditioning coach starting out, it's surprisingly not that great pay. People think like, oh, because you're working with like professional rugby players and whatever, it's, you know, it's really
that,
cool.
That was my initial instinct, yeah.
Yeah, really glamorous, but actually, no, it's really not. like, for instance, I worked at like London Wasps. I did like 6 months there and like they were on their knees, like in terms of like, you know, finance and stuff. Yeah, yeah. Most people are voluntary, loads of students doing internships like me. So no, not really. I mean, if you get to the top of the tree, you know, and obviously you're at a big club. So like I did a bit of Saracens and obviously they're, well,
they were
been in a bit of trouble recently, but they were a big club and like some of the top trainers there obviously, you know, got a fairly decent wage. But no, really, like in terms of the personal training, like in some ways it was actually more profitable, but I wouldn't say that was really my main reason for wanting to do it. It was more actually because I was really passionate about it and actually I really liked the idea of running my own business and actually trying to develop it. So I also got offered a job at Southampton Uni as a lecturer, which tied in quite nicely with me sort of graduating. So I think I literally graduated in like July and then started at Southampton in September. Bournemouth Rugby Club offered me their job as like head of S&C, and that was like the first season they were in the National 2, so that was quite a decent standard of rugby. So there was a couple of things like that, a couple of other little things that sort of like came my way down in Dorset. Mrs. is down here, I should say that, she'll kill me otherwise. and like I said, I already had this sort of like pool of clients, which was, you know, obviously quite loyal, and, you know, I could always see that growing. So I thought, well, look, it'd be stupid not to move down here. You know, it's easy to kind of get a place together and just sort of develop. So I did. Initially, we sort of said it'd be about a year. You know, I sort of said, right, we'll give it 12 months, but if I do it, I'm going to do it properly. So we're going to like obviously develop a name.
So what was the vision back then? When you first started out and you thought, all right, I'm going to go and do this, where did you see it in? So you just started it. When did you see it going for 18 months, 2 years?
Yeah, so I think initially I wanted to get it to the point where like every day of the week, you know, I had regular fixed appointments where, you know, I knew around obviously all the other commitments, you know, I knew I was going to be busy. So I didn't want it to be sort of like a sort of 1-2 day a week business. So I wanted to get it to the point where, you know, 5 days a week outside of all the other commitments, like I said, you know, I was busy. I was, you know, obviously making a profit. The business was growing. I could see progress and, you know, I wanted to get to that point. And like initially, I thought, right, if we're going to do this, we want to do it real, because beforehand, and it sounds like kind of funny now, like when you think about it, but like beforehand, I literally had no business cards. I didn't have a website. I didn't have a Facebook page. I never posted anything.
But this is 10 years ago. Is it 10 years ago?
Probably a bit later than 10 years ago. This would have been like 2012, 13.
So it was the height of when Facebook was big as
well. Yeah, yeah. So it was around that sort of time. And like, it was weird because obviously at LA Fitness, especially before that, all the other trainers were quite almost self-reliant on, like, you know, having their taster cards and having their golden tickets and having all this sort of stuff. And it was all these little marketing gimmicks that they all used to use. And I literally was just go up to people, chat to them face-to-face, you know, talk to them, book them in, get a number,
And then, you know,
I'll tell you what's really interesting is I work in a business to business environment. You work in business to consumer, really, business to consumer.
B2C, yeah.
And the similarities is, I think, that the main way that I get business through B2B is relationships and speaking to people and networking and understanding. It's exactly the same in B2C. Mm. If you don't put yourself out there and understand what this person needs or what this person needs or what they're struggling with, you can't fit your tailor your product to that need.
Definitely, and I completely agree. And to be honest, that's still kind of the way I do things now. You know, in the last couple of years, as we've kind of grown, so like, I suppose if I keep developing the story a little bit, so obviously that first year went well. I came on board. So my best friend at the time as well, from Bournemouth Uni, he's also from London, but he stayed down here. He's actually married to a girl from Bournemouth, and he did graphic design. So I enlisted his help. We sort of built a brand. So it was originally called Sean Burgess Personal Training, actually. And we got a logo. We did a fairly basic website, you know, did all that sort of stuff. I think we launched a Facebook page, but we didn't use it that much. And then, it just developed from there. And then 2015, like, things started getting, you know, really quite big. So things were going well. So we actually went limited as a company. So we just went from being me, the trainer, to like actually taking it a bit more official. So we registered in company's house, changed the name actually to Sean Burgess Fitness, because we realized at the time that we were doing, I was doing more than PT. It wasn't just PT, it was the classes, it was all the other stuff as well. And then, it's just grown and grown from there. And then over the years, obviously, you know, numbers in terms of have increased in terms of obviously like people that we see. I've enlisted obviously trainers to come work with me. So I've got like a couple of full-time.
How nervous was that when you were like, because having your own brand and having your own sort of franchise or starting your own company, bringing somebody into that mold in order to build it, did you have to find the right people? Was it an interview process or were you just...
Yeah, to a certain degree, yes. I mean, I think I probably found it harder in the early days to outsource to especially other trainers.
Yeah.
And in the early days, like in terms of recruitment, we had quite a few hiccups, you know, in regards to finding the right people. You know, we definitely probably made a few mistakes in terms of recruiting some PTs. I mean, we had a couple of disasters really in terms of people that came aboard and lasted like in one case almost a day, you know. So there's definitely some stories I could say there. But so I found it quite difficult. And I think looking back on it, probably the processes behind it probably weren't thorough enough. So we used Indeed and we used like sales websites and things, advertising websites, things like that. Whereas actually what I found is over the last couple of years, especially a lot of the people that work for me now and have worked for me before and have come from just friends, recommendations, people I've met, you know, in some cases people that weren't even qualified, you know, in the fitness industry. And I've just kind of said to them, look, you know, you've got the right characteristics, you've got the right skills. If I was to put you through a course and get you qualified, like George, for instance, you know, would you be interested
in working? Shout out to George.
Yeah, he will love me for the little props there. But would you be interested in coming to work for me? And that's been proven to be a fairly successful business model so far. So, but we got to about that sort of 15 stage, and I took on the help of a business consultant.
Okay.
So I was doing a bit of work at Wimborne Rugby Club. So I was doing sort of strength conditioning for them, and one of their players became a really good friend of mine, and he does a bit of part time business consultancy, and he still does. He just sort of was nibbling away at me saying like, you know, we should have a meeting, we should talk about things because like, you know, your business looks good, but you haven't got enough structure and all of that. And from sitting down with him and looking at it, I was like, wow, yeah, this guy's right. You know, so he was asking me these questions like, right, where have you got this written down? Where have you got that? What's your processes for this? What's your processes for that? And I was like, well,
it's just gut feeling.
Yeah. It's just in my head. Like, you know, there's no Excel sheet for that. So he really got me on track, and we obviously made things a lot more professional. And then that's obviously when somebody went registered, and then things have kind of organically grown from there.
Is that around the time that, because I'm presuming you didn't always have the boot camps and the sort of group classes?
So the boot camp's been going about 4 years now. So that was around the sort of time we actually went limited. So around sort of 15, 16, you know, we were like, obviously everything was going like very well. You know, probably tried to grow almost a bit too quick. So, you know, we took a few punts on a few things. Like we started a boot camp up in Bournemouth at Top Heath School, and, you know, recruited a few more staff, and we're trying to sort of like push the model quite hard. And that's where like some of the issues in terms of...
Why didn't it go well?
I think it was difficult really. I think...
Was it too many fingers in too many pies, or was it...
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, there's possibly a bit of that. And I think like Sonny, the business consultant, if he was here, he'd probably be nodding his head right now saying that. But I mean... You know, things didn't go badly. I mean, we didn't, you know, it wasn't like we sort of fell off a cliff or anything, but like the Talbot Heath boot camp went okay. We did two courses, and then we sort of cancelled the third one because we weren't getting the numbers. But the problem was we were probably investing a lot in different marketing avenues. And really, if I was to look back at it now and think about like the money that was involved and like what the potential sort of yield from that would be, actually it was probably a little bit naive. So like we were investing a lot in like magazine prints, we were doing some like poster work, we were doing like house flyers, we did some radio ads for a week, you know, all of these things. And like,
could you see the return on investment in that sort of stuff? Or was it?
Well, with the radio, yeah, you know, you looked at it and you think, wow, you know, this just sounds really good because obviously loads of people are going to be hearing this and it's going to be going out. And well, that was a bit different as well because we had the presenters come in and they were doing challenges with us. Some of it was being filmed. So it seemed really good at the time. But actually, you know, when I look back at it now, it's like, well, how much research did we do into that? You know, what have others seen as a return on that, you know, in terms of their return on investment? So I think we could have probably been a bit more thorough in some of the decision making there. And actually, as I've found over the years, and it just comes with experience, and I don't necessarily regret some of those decisions.
Because you don't know unless you try it.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was about to say. Because, you know, I've learned a lot of lessons from that. And actually, as I've come to learn over the years, the best way really to kind of, like you said earlier, to kind of bring people into your business and build relationships is B2C, and just actually seeing people face to face, talking to them face to face, and actually just getting to know someone.
What's your go-to advertising method now? Because I know that SBF is big on you do regular posts on Instagram, Facebook.
I'm personally quite mixed on social media, believe it or not. So like, you know, obviously you look at our pages and there's stuff going out every day, and you know, we've set lots of stuff up obviously to try and promote obviously social media. But you know, there was a period of time where we invested quite heavily in social media. We brought on someone who was charging quite a decent amount of money. He was running it for us, big company, et cetera. And, you know, the return on investment from that was minimal at best. You know, I've spoke to other business owners who run multi-million pound companies and they say the same thing. So I think social media is important. I mean, I've worked with business consultants that have said to me, like, you know, they almost can it. And I'm like, no, it is important because it's brand awareness and it is, you know, it is.
I had a guy on the podcast, my old boss actually, and he's not a believer in social media and he doesn't believe that, and that's a B2B environment. So I suppose it depends on the business and it depends on the consistency and the value that you're generating through the social media channels.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think with social media, if you're going to do it and you want to make it profitable, it almost has to be your primary focus. And I think, you know, if everyone always sort of reels off a few names of people on social media that have, you know, done really well. But, you know, you could probably name like 5, maybe 10. And then if you were to sort of say, right, okay, well, that's 5, 10 people. That seems like quite a lot. But actually, let's look at like the millions of people that have also tried it and failed. And the biggest difference is the people that make it successful are doing it every single day. They're consistent in what they do.
And they've got a team behind them that runs that social media.
Yeah,
for
they've
them.
Probably got a team behind them. You know, even the guys that start out and do it on their own, but you know, it is pretty much what they do. That's their business. You know, they're Instagram trainers, they're like YouTube trainers, you know. And that's never been something I wanted to do. You know, I always wanted to be more.
You've never wanted to go down the Joe Wicks or the.
Not necessarily, no. I mean, like the online coaching is in it something which maybe I've never closed the door to it. You know, if you're going to do it, you need to have everything in place where you can do it properly.
Yeah, you need the processes in place.
Absolutely. I mean, I could do it now quite easily. You know, I could do assessment screening, I could write programs, things like that, but it's quite time consuming. And to do it properly, you need to make sure that you've got enough time to be able to dedicate to it to make it successful. And I'm definitely now, all these years in business, not jumping into anything unless, you know, I've got the right processes in place and I've got the right amount of time to do it, because otherwise it's just going to be kind of half done. And, you know, I don't want to be in that position. So, and also I look at it and think, well, you know, we're growing, so, you know, things are going well. Productivity is obviously improving.
You know, just open a new premises in Bournemouth.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, so what's going to be the biggest business target for me at the moment? And, you know, and who knows what the online market's going to be like, you know, so you could really sort of cut your nose to spite your face. You could really focus on your online stuff. And then if that crashes, what have you got left? You know, so, you know, the online stuff will hopefully come about in the future organically when, like, the face-to-face
local, once you've built your audience,
localized businesses, almost self-sustainable. And then when they're self-sustainable, I can say, right, well, I could probably take 10 hours out of my week every week to do online coaching.
Yeah.
And it's not going to affect turnover. It's not going to affect, you know, obviously.
So how many people do you got working for you now at SBF?
In terms of like trainers, personal trainers, I would sort of classify a lad called George, you know, and Jordan as my sort of main trainers. They're not on like full-time contracts or anything like that, but they virtually do work for me as their main income, and it's their main job. And another, we've got another lady coming on board who's going to also be doing personal training called Lisa. She does a lot of classes for us. We're getting another trainer in Bournemouth to come help me out as that grows. And then obviously there's a lot of people in the background. So we've got a girl who does social media every day. There's a lady called Emma who does all the admin for us.
Because that's one of the things I like about SPF. And I've worked, I've been to other gyms before, but it's the interaction. You've got the WhatsApp groups. You've the boot camps are very well run. Every single session is different. The weigh-ins, everything just seems to flow perfectly. And I'm sure you're behind the scenes, you're like ramming stuff in and trying to run around and get it all done. But from a consumer point of view, it works perfectly.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you wouldn't believe the amount of planning, the planning that goes into boot camps. Unbelievable, you know.
It's, where do the ideas come from?
Because my brain, really. But I mean, as obviously the years go by, some themes obviously get slightly repeated, but we just change the session up in terms of the structure and the exercises. Yeah. But so it takes about 15 hours probably to write each course. And then usually when I'm sitting down to do that, the first thing I would do is look at the calendar. So I look at, like, I go on Google, look at the events that are coming up for that year, particularly obviously for the period that the bootcamp's on. So this one's January to like March. And then if there's anything on there that stands out, so without giving the game away, we're doing an American football theme session tomorrow.
Yes.
And there's an American football match taking place in London this weekend. So we're kind of theming it around that. There's a Valentine's Day session coming up. You know, we do a Halloween.
Is that
one.
Partner workouts?
Yeah, probably will be. Yeah. But, so I look at the dates in the calendar. That usually would then eat up 5 to 10 sessions. You know, just based on themes around that. Then I just use my creative minds and try and come up with some unique themes, you know, in terms of different things. So that usually is up about another 5 or 10. And then there's some sessions which are quite staple that, you know, I always kind of do in the course. So we always do like a week one, week 10 sort of fitness testing session. We usually do one halfway through. A couple of other sessions get sort of fairly repeated because they're just kind of part of boot camp and the process is like the Wicked Wednesdays going around the mats and stuff. Just things that people like, you know, people like boxing, so I always try and make sure there's one or two boxing sessions in because people enjoy it.
Those are my favorite sessions.
Exactly, so like, you know, obviously when you get feedback like that, obviously you try and keep the audience happy, sort of thing. So it goes like that, really. And then
do you see the same old people returning? I must admit I come to boot camps and then around Christmas time I lose the motivation because I've got alcohol and food. And then I pile on the weight and then I come after Christmas. And then during the summer I'm like, yes, I'm going to get summer fit, body fit. And then I sort of drop off again towards Christmas. And it seems to be a cycle.
It is, yeah. And you see that all the time, fitness, really. I mean, that's the typical story, isn't it? And absolutely. And obviously one thing, as you know yourself, that we've tried to develop in the last 18 months, and it's a big part of the way the business is going, and this is kind of the future direction of the business, is to develop basically like a membership program.
Yeah.
Because the idea behind bootcamp is that we want it to be almost self-sustainable, because exercise classes in the main aren't sustainable. You know, so most exercise classes from like 10 years ago are no longer running, and anyone who does like independent classes, you usually find they have like a pretty good run and then it usually tails off. So like, the beach boot camps run by the army have gone bust. You know, they're no longer run. There's people that have done similar things to like what we're doing, but obviously different ways. And you know, the numbers are quite small. So for it to be sustainable, the membership has worked well because we can get, because we need basically like 40 people to come to each one. So we can get, like, our target is to try and get up to that. And we're pretty much there now. So so we can guarantee that we've got that amount of members coming. It also builds a community. So like boot camps for me, in my head, and like, everyone who comes, it's more than just turning up and doing a fitness class. So, you know, we want it to feel like a community feel, you know, like you said, the WhatsApp groups, the interaction between people. You know, we've seen people become like best friends and still are. You know, people who don't even come to boot camp anymore are still best friends with people that do, you know, and they go out for dinner and meet up and do X, Y, and Z. So, and that's kind of what we want. So we want to build that community feel. We want people to become friends. We want people to share like experiences together. And
which strangely is what social media is about.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's the thing with social media. So like we looked at like Facebook groups because, you know, like a couple of years ago, you know, we were talking to companies, they were saying, right, you need to build a Facebook group for Facebook group for your bootcamp in Paul, your Facebook group for your bootcamp in Bournemouth. And we tried all that sort of stuff. And we found that the interaction levels actually weren't that high.
Yeah.
So thinking about that and the amount of time it takes to run it and the amount of like kind of sort of endeavor and even finance to run those properly and get people to like sort of obviously interact, it wasn't really going anywhere. So like, you know, people weren't really going on the Facebook group and like commenting and sharing things and doing stuff like that. So we're like, well, why is that? And it's because most people genuinely just check their phones. So, and they're more likely to text than they are to put a post up on Facebook, you know, because they think, oh, you know, if I put a post on Facebook, everyone's going to see it. Whereas if I put something in WhatsApp, it's only like this group, you know, and I know these people, I know how they're going to react, you know. So WhatsApp's free. It's a free platform. It's a brilliant way to market. It's, you know, and it's a great way to create.
And it removes all of the roadblocks. So in any sales process, getting somebody to buy something, you have to make it as easy as possible. And if you're already in the WhatsApp group and then you're starting to do the next bootcamp or the 1-2-3 course, which you run in the evenings, it just seems to flow a lot quicker. And it's organic.
Absolutely. So that was the reason why we switched all of our efforts into creating those groups and trying to obviously make sure that became like the community group. And that became obviously the way that people did interact. And like, because people feel like they're part of something and they're working with others and they're sharing those experiences, obviously we hope that then keeps them coming back and that keeps them as part of the group. Whereas sometimes you go to a class and especially if you're on your own, you don't know anyone, you get isolated. And like statistics and the research will tell you that most people drop out because they don't have a workout partner, they don't have a workout friend, they don't have anyone to encourage them. And that's what the group's about. And you've probably seen yourself in the last like 6 months to a year, we've kind of almost, as the trainers, sort of taken a bit of a back step in terms of how much we comment on those. And we're almost just trying to get the groups to almost run themselves.
Yeah, which is strange because there seems to be genuine leaders that step out on the WhatsApp groups and say, oh, are we going to do this? Or are we going to do this? And it's just a natural evolution.
It is, it's a natural thing. And we've noticed that. And that's been sort of fairly purposeful. I mean, some of it's obviously down to the amount of time we can dedicate to it as well. But, you know, we'll put some articles up every now and again and a few posts and we'll comment back if people ask us direct questions. But, you know, those groups are almost better. And we found when they almost do run themselves. And, you know, the groups that we were quite active on and we were commenting and that stuff like that, you get some feedback, but sometimes not as much as you think. So, and that's the way, like, we want the business to go. We want it to become like a community. We want it to become like a, like, and that's, you know, how the business model hopefully will just keep progressing.
See, in a previous company, I used WhatsApp group to keep in touch with my sales team. So when I was managing a national sales team, I used WhatsApp and I used to get constant banter coming back and forth and keeping in touch.
Well, that's what it's about.
So then the company heads thought, oh, this is a really great platform for us to use to engage with, say, let's say marketing or a new initiative. So they'd create another WhatsApp group, which was just solely for marketing. Strangely enough, nobody commented. Because it's not related to their jobs and it's the company trying to force an agenda.
Okay.
If you're creating something which is for the people and it's run by the people, it works. And it's really strange. Where do you see the fitness industry going in the next 5 to 10 years?
It's difficult to say. You can only kind of base your response on that on sort of current trends and everything that's been happening over the last couple of years.
Yeah.
I think the investment in the fitness industry is mixed, depending on how you want to look at it. So there's still a lot of money that is invested into healthcare and investing into the fitness industry if you look at the numbers. But if you were to look at the numbers from a sort of a step back point of view and look at it as a bigger timeline, I think in 2017 there was 3.5% less investment in the fitness industry and health, and there was a similar figure in 2018 from the government. And I think because the government in this country is obviously very transitional and there's been lots going on, as much as healthcare and obviously improving like the activity levels and obesity rates and all of that sort of stuff is definitely a key agenda for the governments, and there's no doubt about that. And there's a lot of initiatives that are being launched. There's still probably more that can be done from the top level, and that gets obviously filtered down.
Do you think that has an impact on mental health as well?
100%. I mean, like, the mental health investment's gone up every single year for the last like 5 years. I think I'm talking about this tonight in my seminar, but I think it's up to nearly 100 million now invested per year, which is, sounds like a lot of money, but actually in regards to how much they invest in terms of health and sport and leisure, actually it's quite a small statistic because I think it's about 2.5 billion. So a little bit of disparity there, but it's a massive issue. I've just been actually asked by Bournemouth Uni to go in and do some lectures for their computer sort of science courses based on looking at health, fitness, nutrition, and how that can impact obviously on your performance. But one of the particular reasons why you wanted me to come in and do that, and I'm doing this in March, is because they've got a higher number of mental health referrals on those courses than any other course at uni. And he So like he being the sort of head of department strongly believes that a lot of this is to do with like the students' overall well-being and health because they're very inactive, they've got poor diets and generally just don't think healthy and act healthy. So he wants me to hopefully come in and inspire him to do more. And he's hoping that will obviously see a decrease in the mental health, obviously.
So as a father now, do you see that as an integral part of your job as a dad?
Yeah, definitely, yeah. I mean, there's people joke about it, but obviously there's no doubt that I'm going to encourage him to be fit and healthy. And I think it's not something which should just be like a hobby or, you know, just a casual activity. It should be who you are. You know, being healthy and being fit defines you as a person and also defines you in terms of like where your life goes. Because if you're fit, healthy, in terms of yourself, in terms of your physical and physiological well-being, then that's going to obviously impact on your psychological well-being.
Yeah.
And wherever you take yourself in life, wherever business sector you end up working in, you're going to be better at your job. You're going to be more productive. You're going to be a high achiever and you're generally going to have a better all-round life. You know, you're going to build better relationships. You're going to, you know, experience life more. You're probably going to be more successful. And I think, you know, that is the underlying message, really. And, you know, nobody likes being ill. Nobody likes having diseases. Nobody likes, you know, having injuries. Nobody likes, you know, feeling rubbish, you know. You know, and it's not something that is unachievable for anyone. Anyone can achieve that. You know, you can be healthy. You can be fit. You know, it's not nothing which is out of the reach of anyone. But it's the mindset which some people do
it's
struggle
the application
with.
Of it.
And it's the application of it. And a lot of that sometimes, going back to my son, obviously does stem from sometimes people's upbringing and their childhood and generations before them. And, you know, getting that message across obviously very early, I think is important because that's the sort of thing will stay with you for the rest of
life.
So
do you think there should be more government funded in schools for physical activity?
Definitely, yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't have like research in front of me, I know anecdotally that PE lessons have definitely declined in terms of the number of lessons that kids do. I know in a lot of schools, especially in around me in London, lessons have been cut from 60 minutes to 45 minutes. I know that there's less numbers of kids playing like sport past the age of 16 now than there ever has been. And even like locally, and this is only what I just observe, you know, what I hear through, you know, sort of friends and grapevines, you know, there seems to be less football teams around now, you know, the younger age groups, even like the older age groups, you know, rugby clubs. You know, when I first moved down here, most teams around here had three or four rugby teams. Now most of them are down to two, maybe three, you know. I used to hear people playing in like Bournemouth Division 10 football and now it's down to like six. You know, so there's all these little things. And there is still examples of like clubs, you know, that are doing really well. I know Broadstone Football Club, for instance, has got over 100 kids like involved, if not more. But as a overall, I think, yeah, definitely we're probably not as progressed as we would like to be.
So outside of my work and my day job, I go to the gym to relax. What do you do? Because you're in the gym all the time.
That's very true, yeah. That's probably my biggest downfall is I probably don't spend enough time just relaxing.
Do you have a good relationship with alcohol?
I don't really drink, which is probably not a surprise, but yeah, I mean, I do, you know, if it's a big night out and this ain't going on, then obviously, yeah, you know, I will, but I'm definitely not one that will sit at home and drink, you know, and even if I go out, even if it's only just a sort of a low key thing, I probably will drive. But, like for example, I had friends come down from London before Christmas. We all went out and watched a Joshua fight and had a catch up. We hadn't seen each other in months. So, you know, there was a few drinks I got slung that night, obviously. But I think as a business owner, it's difficult. I think if you're part of a business and you're obviously an employee, it's easier to sort of obviously go home and just completely unwind because I think, you know, obviously you do your 9 to 5, you've done your tasks for the day, you can go home, you can generally switch off. When you're the business owner, things are a little bit different because
it's lonely at the top.
It's lonely at the top, and it's 100% because, you know, there's always something to sort out. You know, there's always an action to be sort of ticked off, or there's, you know, something to approve, or you know, so there's always something to do. And obviously, if you're ambitious and you obviously still want to keep moving forward, the only person that's really going to drive that is you. And you know, the moment you sort of take your foot off the gas, then obviously you do end up getting taken over. So yeah, you know, I try to unwind a bit on the Sunday. That's kind of my day off and just play with a boy and go out with my missus and do things like that. But it's quite difficult sometimes.
So we're just coming to the end of the podcast, and what we've done on all the podcasts is ask 5 key questions. And I'll run through exactly the same with you. So of the social media networks, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn, which would you prefer?
Depends on the context.
As a catch-all that could do all, which which right. social media?
Well,
or which social media network do you prefer?
I think from a business marketing point of view, I think Facebook is probably the best platform for us. I think I think it's easier to kind of market through Facebook. I do see value in Instagram, but actually I don't think it, in terms of return on investment, I don't think it actually is as successful as people think. I think LinkedIn's useful for entrepreneurs and it's useful for people that are trying to progress their personal career and development. So I think it's definitely value in LinkedIn. I suppose probably being around London and growing up when Twitter was kind of launching, I still kind of do have a bit of an affinity with Twitter. And I think, especially from working in academic circles, Twitter gets used quite a lot for uploading articles and like sharing, like obviously, you know, some pretty decent reports. Right? Whereas I sometimes feel that with Facebook, is particularly, it can be a bit watered down and it's more pictures of people at the zoo and like eating their dinner and checking in at pubs. Whereas on Twitter, generally you find that the content's a bit, maybe a bit more sort of higher level, a bit more quality.
So what did you want to be when you grew up?
Originally, I wanted to be a footballer, so yeah. That was the dream. So I got fairly far, but I never quite made it past that final step. And then when I was young, I've always been quite lucky. I knew I wanted to be a coach. So from the age of probably 15 onwards, I knew I wanted to be a coach. I knew that was the way it was going to go. And whether that was going to be a football coach or whether that was going to be a fitness coach, I wasn't quite sure in the early days. But as like, sort of the years developed, it was quite clear it was going to be fitness. And yeah. Very young, 17, 18, knew I wanted to run my own fitness company. I knew I wanted to work in the industry and I've worked towards that. So I've been quite lucky because a lot of kids don't really know what they want to do.
Have you ever competed? Like bodybuilding or anything on stage like that?
No. Bodybuilding is not really kind of...
Your niche?
It's not my niche. I mean, I don't mind bodybuilding. I've trained people that have done it, obviously. No, I think I've done weightlifting. So I've done Olympic lifting. I did a little bit of that at uni. Obviously, I've played a lot of sport. So, you know, I used to box, I've done athletics, I've obviously used to sprint in for clubs, played football, as I said, pretty decent level.
So more functional then? More functional?
Yeah,
fitness.
I played a bit of rugby. Yeah, so I've done a lot of sport, but in terms of like the fitness industry, the only thing really I've competed in is probably a little bit of weightlifting. And even that was, I wouldn't say it was a it wasn't high level competition, but yeah.
What's the worst job that you could do? If you had to think of the worst possible job?
Probably for me would be something sedentary, which sort of tied me to a desk.
Data entry.
Yeah. I'd say something like that. Something which tied me to a desk and it was pretty sedentary.
I've got two questions left. The first one is, what leader do you look up to the most?
There's a few, but if I was to say one, it'd be Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
So I'm very into my history. Some people know, some people don't. So I spend a lot of time looking back on especially the civil rights movements and like just history throughout the years. So most mornings I still try and watch videos and like listen to sometimes podcasts and read articles and stuff. But probably Martin Luther King, I think a lot of his messages still resonate to the current day. And I think he was so forward thinking in everything that he did. And it's just his embodiment of just kind of how a human being should conduct themselves to be successful. I think he's lessons that anyone could.
And he didn't ask for it. That's the unique thing. He didn't say, come follow me, come follow me.
Yeah.
It was just a natural sort of evolution of where he started.
It was,
his message.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was kind of almost sort of pushed into being leader of the civil rights movement. And, obviously he took that role on with great aplomb. But you know, he was put up against some great adversity. You know, he had so many people trying to shoot him down off his perch, and he responded to all of that in the best humility possible. And even if he was thrown in jail for, as he was many, many times, he still never wavered. He never wavered. He never sort of became angry. He never sort of used violence. He was always very sort of calm and level-headed. And the way he conducted himself, the way he spoke, and like how he believed in everyone, like everyone has the ability to achieve what they want. It's just like I said, it's just lessons that inspire me, but inspire obviously many
millions.
Yeah.
And what was the last book you read?
So I'm quite slack on reading books. that's always been like kind of one of my goals. I need to get back into reading more. I'd love to read more.
Do you read your son?
No, not really. Rarely. He just watches baby TV most of the time. We probably will do more of that in the future. But the last book I read would be something really boring, which would not entertain anyone, and would probably be So it's really boring. But so yeah, actually, so yeah, I read John Gibbons's Muscle Energies Techniques book recently, which is basically like a manual for therapy stretching. So, and there's a lot of like science behind it.
Very industry specific.
Very industry specific. So yeah, I said boring, nothing too interesting.
Thanks, Sean.
No worries.
Whoa. Don't go anywhere yet. Julio, tell people where they can get more information.
If you like the podcast, go visit saleschange.co.uk.
That's good, but you said .do.
Saleschange.co.uk. Why don't you head... No. It's bad. It's bad. Go to saleschange.co.uk and... saleschange.co.uk and subscribe to our incredible newsletter. Thanks for listening.